Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
This is Melanie Cole's Health Radio.
Well, if you're somebody who has asthma or allergies and you look toward medications, they probably include pseudoephedrine. And you know that even some pharmacies have taken the pseudoephedrine products off the shelves and put them behind where you have to ask the pharmacist for them. But what does it really do? What does it mean? Does it keep you awake? Can you give it to your kids? And are there any regulations on it? My guest today is Garth Reynolds. He's a pharmacist licensed in Illinois and Missouri. Welcome to the show, Garth. So let's talk about pseudoephedrine. It's been used for meth. It's used for clearing it out. It can be a little bit addictive. Tell us about pseudoephedrine. What's going on today?
Well, pseudoephedrine itself, first off, thank you for having us on today. And pseudoephedrine itself is not an addictive component, but it is commonly used to treat cough and cold symptoms, mainly from in the nasal symptoms, into helping relieve that nasal stuffiness, but it's also used by a lot of people for treatment of their symptoms from allergic rhinitis, and it's a commonly used medication. Unfortunately, we have a portion of our population that decides to convert it into something a little bit more illicit.
So, do products like Afrin and those kinds of things have pseudoephedrine in it, or is it mostly the oral meds?
It's mainly the oral meds. Some of there are nasal preparations, but not a lot of the ones that you're familiar with, like Afrin. Those do not contain pseudoephedrine. But it's mainly more the oral tablets that you're familiar with, like the pseudoephedrines and some of the combination products that it's in as well.
So, Garth, whereas most medications, so many medications, from yeast all the way through to all kinds of things, have gone from behind the counter to over the counter, something available on the shelves. Pseudoephedrine seems to be going in the direct opposite way. So what's going on with that?
Well, yes, pseudoephedrine was classified as being able to be used for over-the-counter status as a component of self-care, allowing patients to be able to self-treat their conditions and their symptoms. But after a rise in illicit methamphetamine production, starting back in 2005, Congress started passing regulations that would pull it back behind the counter. And since then, it has been restricted in most situations just to pharmacies and behind the counter, where you do have to have a pharmacist interaction to be able to obtain the medication.
Is that going to make it more expensive?
There really hasn't been a dramatic increase in cost because, I mean, it's still technically an over-the-counter medication. It's just that you have to obtain it in the pharmacy department instead of just getting it from the shelf. So that type of interaction, there has not been much of an increase in the pricing.
So then why? Okay, so you said it's not addictive, mm-hmm. and it's been in these products. People are self-medicating. It's also been used for, you know, as you said, back in 2005 or whatever for meth production. Why is it now being stuck behind? Because of that? Just because of that? Or because of other reasons?
Well, the reason it's being more restricted with putting it behind the counter is because people can easily take a lot of commonly obtainable ingredients that can be found in a pharmacy or grocery store or a department like store, where you could easily convert the pseudoephedrine into illicit methamphetamine. And what this is try to limit that access to the medication as much as possible. And that's why the legislation also restricted the amount, the daily amount and the monthly amount of medication that a patient could individually obtain as well.
What did they do in the state of Oregon? What kind of mandate?
Oregon decided to go a little bit more restrictive, and they made it a classified pseudoephedrine as a Class 3 controlled substance, where we usually have a lot of our painkillers and some of our other controlled substances. And they also, so that required a prescription. So they even went one step further in restriction, adding an increased barrier for legitimate patients to be able to obtain a self-care medication.
So where do you see this going, Garth? Do you see that it's going to become something that we need a prescription for, or is it going to stay behind the counter where we just have to come up and ask you?
I think it's going to remain within the pharmacy, within the behind-the-counter aspect. I think it's still going to remain behind-the-counter regardless of the situations. Only two states right now have a restriction for prescription-only status, both Mississippi and Oregon. There are some situations within the country that have a localized situation, like in Missouri, there some counties or some municipalities have had done a city ordinance on this. My experience, that didn't really help anything. It just pushed it to the next community. But by having an interaction with a pharmacist, it also allows for that great interaction between a pharmacist and a patient, be able to make sure that this medication really is the right thing for their symptoms that they need to have treated. And it's just another great way of being able to provide great care between and build that relationship between a patient and a pharmacist. And we don't need increased barriers of adding a prescription requirement at this time, because it would increase costs and put on an undue burden onto the healthcare system that's not really needed for self-care medication.
Well, Garth, as someone with two children who loves my local pharmacist, who I've called at 4 in the morning and midnight, I love my local. And we're going to talk about relationship with local pharmacists. But my last question about the pseudoephedrine is, how do you know? If you've got it behind and you're developing relationships with people and some guy just walks in and do you get to ask them questions? What are you using it for? How do you know they just don't go, I've got allergies, man, I just need it? I mean, how do you know?
And sometimes you really don't. I mean, you should do as best as you can as trying to ascertain what the patient is needing the medication.
Can you say no?
You can, but I always our experience with working with law enforcement when I was practicing in Missouri was they, because of the whenever it's restricted behind the counter, it does get tracked into a national database. So the law enforcement does have access to that of how many boxes are being treated or being purchased. So that's how we know we can keep you within the limits of the law. And really, the law enforcement wanted more and more evidence to show that these people who are using it for illicit purposes are obtaining it from multiple pharmacies, and so they could continue to build their cases. So it actually deterring it just pushes them right down the road. It doesn't. They're going to get it from somewhere, but what we can do is continue to track to build the case so we can start to get these people off the streets and help get this medication, these illicit products off of our streets and keep the medication available for legitimate purposes with legitimate patients.
So we only have about, 2 minutes left. So
sure.
Why don't you take some of this time, Garth, to speak about your local pharmacist? Because as I said, I love my local pharmacists. I think you guys don't get enough credit. I think that sometimes you can answer questions that we might have to wait a long time to see our doctors about. You know about interactions. Sometimes one doctor will give you a prescription, another doctor will, and that one hand doesn't know what the other. And it's your pharmacist that saves the situation and says, well, I just gave you a prescription for this antibiotic. Now you've got this other one, you know, do both your doctors know? So tell the listeners what you want them to know about building that great relationship with their local pharmacist.
Well, absolutely. And you just brought up some of the greatest examples right there. I mean, pharmacists are the medication experts, and we are an essential part of the healthcare team. Working with your doctors and your nurses and helping make sure that the medications that you're receiving are the best options for your personal situation. And the example that you gave, not all the time does everybody have the information between one physician to another. And sometimes it comes together in the pharmacy, and that's where our job is to make sure that, you know, there's not an unnecessary drug interaction that could harm a patient. And that's what we're there as a last line of defense for those prescriptions before they get ultimately to the patient. And
absolutely, and I'm sorry, we're just about out of time now,
sure.
But it's such great information, Garth. Thank you so much. So support your local pharmacist and go see them when you need some questions answered, because that's what they're there for. This is Melanie Cole. You're listening to Radio MD. Stay well.